Welcome to the Great Good Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Don.
And we've spent the last decade plus working with passionate communicators, activists, and do-gooders around the country. We also host a conference called Create Good, where we gather folks to share their work and create a community for people trying to make the world a better place.
The Create Good Podcast is a conversation with changemakers and rabble-rousers to find out what makes them tick and how they create good. Let's get started. Welcome to this episode of the Create Good Podcast. We are so excited to have Twana Hines on the show today. She is an amazing communicator. She has a lot of great experience, and she adds a little spice to our typical communications folks for sure. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. Very good. And I think, you know, the spice is certainly in your experience in sexual health educator work, which I'm so excited to get into today. So tell everybody out there a little bit about yourself and about your business.
Absolutely. So I am the founder and CEO of a business called Funky Brown Chick. Funky Brown Chick. Yes. Truth in advertising. That's me. Yeah. So we have two lines of business. The oldest line of business is straight up sexual reproductive health. It's writing, teaching, speaking, performing one-woman theater shows, everything about sexual health. And I started that back in 2005 when I was working full-time at places like Newsweek, Fast Company, all of these things doing media communications in New York City. So then I expanded the business and began working full-time for myself and added a team by adding the second line of business. And that's where we do data analytics, digital marketing, social media, everything to like take all that like connectivity and how the world works, relationship stuff, to really make that into a digital world of helping people connect to raise money for their organizations, grow their audiences, and move the needle when it comes down to advocacy. So that's what we do. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm proud of my team, proud of the work that I've produced, the team has produced. Life is good.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you're not in the States now, right? Are you in Europe?
At this second, I am sitting on beautiful July 24th, Avenida, something like that. I don't know. Still learning Portuguese. I'm sitting on a street in downtown central Lisbon, Portugal.
Beautiful. Yeah, I would love to get into that transition too sometime in our conversation. Absolutely. So how many years has it been in kind of this nonprofit communication space, helping, supporting nonprofits?
Almost 20 years. And so I've started this back in, when was my first job? And that was 2002. Yeah, 20 years exactly. Whoa, 20 years exactly.
Wow.
So 20 years doing this. Yeah. And I've worked for large organizations, small organizations, nonprofits, for profits. I worked for Land O'Lakes, Fortune 500 companies. So taking all of that kind of stuff and pulling it together to make the strongest strategies that we can.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. So why don't you tell us and the listeners about a little bit about your background? Tell us about your career in about 90 seconds or less, starting from where you got your education and bringing us to now.
Oh my goodness. Okay. All the way back to education. We could do that.
Yeah. Do it.
Yeah. I'm from small town Illinois. And so hometown proud, Illinois proud, Midwestern till I die kind of thing. I went to Illinois State University for undergrad. I got cold and went to Florida State for grad. And then I did postgraduate studies at Universiteit van Amsterdam in the Netherlands and at New York University. So that is education. Career-wise, I started my career at State Department at the American Embassy in The Hague. So when I say relationships make the world go round, I really mean that. So whether we're talking diplomacy or we're talking about strategies that you use to reach people in your business or actually improving your love life, everything in the world comes down to relationships.
So why nonprofits? Why this work?
I love the work that we do. And so my own personal work is all sexual reproductive health and rights. We have 9 areas of impact that we work with when it comes to nonprofits. So that's everything from climate justice, racial justice, civic engagement. Because if those things aren't on point, we'll never have sexual reproductive health and rights and justice in the United States. So if we can't vote or if we don't have access because of something going on in the legislative realms, such as, I don't know, Roe versus Wade gets overturned, I don't know, something like that. There's definitely an intersection between these kinds of issues and sexual reproductive health rights, education, and justice. So we support all kinds of nonprofits that are moving in the same direction that we are.
Interesting. So what has been the kind of the attraction to sexual health, reproductive health? Where has that, do you feel like, was there a moment that you kind of went down that path, or is it kind of been a gradual growing interest?
Oh, it's been a very distinct moment, and it was the first time that I had penis and vagina sex. I've always been somewhat of a nerd. I love knowing all kinds of wonderful things, and it struck me because I grew up evangelical. I grew up in a small town. I was told if you have sex before marriage, you're going to hell, like all these things. So I was slightly older than you would imagine. I was 22 years old the first time that I had penis and vagina sex, and I remember being so amazed that I knew nothing about how my body worked. I couldn't name all the different parts of my partner's reproductive organs or mine. I didn't know when in my cycle I could get pregnant, and I thought, how in the world is this possible? So I became super fascinated by it. I researched on it, I published on it. I got my first sex column 15 years ago, actually 17 years ago at this point, with a magazine called Nerve that was in New York City where I was living at the time. Yeah, and that just opened a lot of opportunities. I love this stuff, educated and trained on this stuff, and that just went really well. I'm so grateful for opportunities that I've had. What's that joke about opportunities meets preparation, and that's the luck, right? And so I wrote for Lifetime Television, I've been in CNN, NPR, for The Guardian, NBC News, Health Magazine, so all of these things over a long career of really trying to make sure that we have healthy relationships in the workplaces and our love lives and our families, like really doing everything that we can. And that pleasure becomes something that's not taboo. We can talk about sex. We can talk about turning each other on. And that is not a taboo topic.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, and I'm sitting in the South. I live in North Carolina. And it's still, so taboo to talk about this. And especially, my 9-year-old. So talking to my friends and about our kids growing in their maturity. And people are still freaking out about it. And like, my kid already knows everything, right? We're bringing her age appropriately through sexual education. But it is fascinating to talk to people about the thing that is such a base opportunity and amazing thing for humans.
Yeah. Well, two thoughts about that. One, you're not in the South. You're not semi-South, I would say. Growing up in Mississippi, exactly, clear views about what's the actual South and what's a semi-South. And so I was probably in my 30s before I realized the word Southerner was not pronounced Southern. It's pronounced Southern. Someone had to tell me that because I didn't know. So I grew up in, I'm from Illinois, but like a lot of, especially Black people, great migration families, we have older relatives that came up from Mississippi. So I spent a huge chunk of my childhood in Mississippi. So that was my first thought when you said you're in the South. I was like, yeah, semi-South. That aside, I always remind people when they're like, oh, but sex is taboo. I always say, no, it's not. Because here's the thing. When you're talking about any form of communication, even with your partner, what's not said is a conversation in and of itself. If you have like blind spots that you can't talk about, or your family members that you can't touch this particular topic because people lose their shit, that's still a way of communicating. Non-communication is a form of communicating, right? Even if you're saying we can't talk about these things, that's silence. It speaks volumes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me, what's your favorite thing about what you get to do every day?
I thought you were going to say, what's your favorite thing? I was like, sex.
Okay, but I mean,
Oh my God, I love it. Okay, my favorite thing about what I get to do every day is that I get to build community and connect with people. I absolutely love the conversations that I have with people and the client-facing sides, the nonprofit leaders and communications directors. Like, I love that part of it. And I love on the one-on-one, very macro level of talking to people about their relationships and their sex life and coaching them through that. Like, I love that. Like, the community, the communication, and the actual connection with others is what I find the most enjoyable portion of my job.
It's awesome. Yeah. And yeah, when you came to speak at Create Good a couple of years ago, that was, just the connection and how honest and real you are with your connecting with people is really, it's an amazing power that you have.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. So magic wand time, what is one thing that you would change about your professional life?
Ooh, right now, that's an easy one. I would not ever have 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. calls. I'm working remotely from Portugal, and I love it. It's fantastic. I highly recommend everyone work in another country for a period of your life if you're able to. And there's all kinds of programs that will actually allow that. And there's, I forget the name of the nonprofit, I can send it to you, that pays nonprofit leaders to actually take sabbaticals and go somewhere else and things like that. So work or non-work, quote, quote, because sabbatical actually makes your work better. So any of these things that you could do to get abroad, I highly recommend it. That said, it's not all like cupcakes, sunshine, and rainbows flying out of unicorns' asses all day, right? Yeah. Like, it's still work. And so one of the things that I wish that I could change is that if we were all somehow in the exact same time zone, and so that way the energy matches, right? So even if I'm awake and taking a call at 9 p.m., it's not the same energy as someone for whom they just finished lunch and it's 1 p.m. in Los Angeles, because there's an eight-hour time change between us and them. And so while I'm working remotely in this moment, the time change, I would say, is probably the only thing that if I could wave a magic wand, I would make everyone in the exact same time zone.
Yeah. I bet that is definitely a challenge. So what are you looking forward to professionally in the next year?
Learning Portuguese. I'm excited about it. Yeah, I'm Dutch Dutch-English bilingual. I speak extremely limited French and extremely limited Italian, haven't studied them both. But I'm very excited about learning Portuguese, and I want to learn it to fluency so that as we continue to grow and as I continue to spend stints here in Portugal and then go back to the United States, that I'm able to just function even more deeply. When I learned Dutch, there was a clear difference between my life in the Netherlands when I didn't speak Dutch and my life in the Netherlands when I did speak Dutch. And so I feel like you're just better integrated into the country, the society, the everything, when you actually speak the language of the people there. People here speak English, as many people around the world do, but when people are together, when there's chatter on the buses, when someone says, hey, look out, like any of these kinds of things, that's all going to be in Portuguese. So I look forward to learning it.
That's great. Yeah, that's amazing that you have so much language. And yeah, that is fantastic. Yeah. How do you think that's kind of helped like influence the way you actually approach communications too?
That's a really great question. I think I may be, like, I'd have to think more deeply about it, because I really love that question. But, like, my knee-jerk response would be probably that I focus more on what and how people say things. There was this funny TikTok the other day, and it was this Irish guy, I can't remember his name, but he's hilarious, and he was mocking, you know, the way that Irish people offer each other cake compared to the way that German people offer each other cake. And so the Irish person's like, oh, have a piece of cake. And the Irish person's like, oh, no, I couldn't possibly. He's like, oh, come on, take it. He's like, no, I couldn't, thank you. He's like, oh, and then eventually he's like, okay, great. Oh, great, thank you. And then so he's like, if this were Germany, it would be like, and he says, yeah, would you like a piece of cake? Yeah, danke schön, bitte schön. It's very much like, and you get your
transactional
cake.
Transactional, yeah.
Right, and so then his joke is the Irish person offers the German person cake, and he's like, would you like a piece of cake? And the German's like, yeah, bitte. And he's like, but sure of yourself, aren't you? And so I think maybe like having been exposed to different cultures and languages, maybe I pay slightly more attention to not only what is said, how is said, how people are communicating. It's just so much of it's not. There's just so much subtext to things. And I say that as an incredibly blunt person. Like, I always joke, no one has to worry about what I think because I will tell you. So even as an extremely blunt person and my style of communication, I find it fascinating that, like, people still interpret things all kinds of ways and communicate with each other different ways. And it's just, it's interesting. I love this stuff. It's fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Great. So you've achieved a lot. You've been a lot of, you know, for-profit side, non-profit side. Now you're on your biz. What do you feel like you still have to achieve?
You know, I'm actually taking a quarterly break, and I highly recommend this for if any of you out there are entrepreneurs and own your own business, or if you are a nonprofit leader, you're an executive director, or you're chief, a C-suite executive or whatever, but anyone who's really in charge of leading the direction of your organization. And on a, you know, very macro, everyone who works in an organization is in charge of that, including the people who cut the checks, sweep the floors, who whatever. Like, we're all in charge of making sure that the organization functions. And if you personally are responsible for managing people and their livelihood, their ability to stay employed, or programs or anything taking a break is so incredibly important for that clarity. And so actually next week I'm on break. Like I take a quarterly break where I'm gone for at least a week. And that gives me that downtime to think, okay, and given where we are now, it's like, what do we want for the next quarter? What do we want for next year? Like really take that break, because like it can be hard when you are the person who's charged with steering a lot of stuff, right? Of like, what's that next level up? What do you need to do? What does growth look like? It's very different when you're like the junior accountant. And so your growth is you're the senior accountant. And then maybe you head the, you know, your deputy lead of the accounting team. Then you're like the lead of the accountant. Maybe you're controller one day. Like there's a career trajectory. And I think for people who are leading organizations or building organizations from scratch, it's not always that clear. And so I find these breaks to be very, very helpful to kind of think what needs to happen next. And so that's where I am right now. And so the most honest answer is, I don't know. And I feel very comfortable with that ambiguity of, I don't want to prescribe anything until I've had that break. And that break for me is next week.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree. I find that too, that the only way to move forward when you have so much to do is to stop.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And that, yeah, because we, yeah, I know, I'm sure both of us have a very long to-do list with lots of little tactics, right? And tasks and things to do. And, but the only way to see the big picture is to stop all that and step away. And I think that is, yeah, that's where you get the big ideas and just gain your confidence back too, right? Of like, it's okay that, yeah, that you're able to step away from that day to day, but it's really only possible when you stop.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great. Cool. Okay. So what advice do you have to somebody who's new to the nonprofit sector or just starting out their career in general?
Ooh, someone who's starting out their career and they're applying for their first nonprofit job and they're like, I have a good heart and I want to do this because I care about it. And it's like, great. Okay. But like, think very broadly about what that looks like. Is that job in the United States, especially now on the other side of COVID? Maybe it's not. Everybody's working remotely in some fashion still. I don't think we're ever going to go back to always 100% in the office in one fixed location. So first I would say, think of where is it? Is it in the United States? Is it not? If it is in the United States, where in the country is that? Is it in nonprofits? You know, corporate social responsibility, shared value, all the stuff they're saying. A lot of that stuff mimics a lot of the things that the nonprofit organizations have done for years. Like I said, I've bounced between working for State Department at the American Embassy, which was government, working at Land O'Lakes, working at State Farm, those were for-profit places, working at Planned Parenthood, which is non-profit. Like I've had a diverse and varied and grateful, very, very grateful for the career that I've had and the impact that I've been able to make over time. So for someone who's coming in, I wouldn't necessarily advise them to limit their impact to nonprofits, especially as nonprofits start cherry picking a lot of their leaders out of the for-profit world. And so I don't think one is inherently better or worse than the others. I know it can be very fun to beat up on for-profit. All you gotta do is talk to anyone who's worked in a nonprofit for a long time and learn exactly how non-toxic the environment can be. So all of that is to say, I don't think there are angels all in one place and demons all in another. I feel like to live your best life, fuck everybody else, really think about what you personally want, what would make you happy. And the outgrowth from that is connecting with others in a way that feels more authentic and all of those wonderful things. But don't pick a nonprofit job because you feel like all the people you went to college with are doing that. Don't pick a nonprofit job because you feel like that's the only way that you can make an impact. Yeah, you can do it. Yes, do it if you want to, if it feels right to you, but don't limit yourself to say that's the only way you can. I worked at University of Chicago, which is quote, quote, nonprofit, but it's also very much academia. And I one of my favorite jobs and an amazing manager there who I still keep in contact with, Jeff Rosen, wonderful human being. Had great coworkers who've come to visit me when I've moved to different places. One is planning to come to Lisbon to come visit me as I work remotely here. So like, it can be anything, academia, for-profit, not-for-profit, international NGO, in the U.S., not in the U.S., remote, full-time. I mean, play with it. It's your world. You only get one chance, so have a good time with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Fun. We are joy seekers. That is that is the biggest thing that guides our decisions, right? And that we truly, we like to do things, right? So whether that's work or going places, but we like to do, and we like to joy, and we like to create. So I think it's, yeah, it's always the thing I feel like people miss in, you know, if they're having any sort of unsatisfaction in their life, is I'm always like, well, what do you like to do? Like, what makes you happy? Like, I don't know. I'm like, well, you got to figure that out.
Exactly. You know? And by the way, that goes for relationships too. Like, people will say they're unhappy. What is making you unhappy? I don't know. I just feel unhappy. Got to figure that shit out too.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Okay. So this next section of questions are centered around how you receive feedback on your creative ideas. So this isn't necessarily like personnel or like HR or annual review stuff. This is more about how you like to gain feedback on your ideas, on your work, and things like that. So first off, just how do you personally process criticism and feedback? How do you kind of take that in? Do you take it in well? Do you have trouble with that? How do you feel about it?
I take it in incredibly well, so much so that I'm surprised when other people don't. So I've actually had to like train myself to be less blunt when delivering feedback. But like, I'm not a, like, and this is for the people out there, and especially the women and femme-identified people out there who are blunt speakers, more power to you. And I think that often what happens is I don't necessarily immediately see value in like beating around the bush, coming at something sideways, or all these kinds of things. I've always been a very direct person. Even as a kid, my sister, I have a sister who's 6 years older than I am, and so she was more experienced and worldly than I was. She was a 12th grader when I was in sixth grade. And she's like, you have zero poker face. Like, what you think shows immediately in your face. And I'm like, I know. And I have zero filter. So it's just like, I take criticism well in that respect. I see it, and I'm not even shitting you. I see it as free consultations. You want to look at my shit and tell me things that you think can make it better? Ooh, spend all your time doing it. Go as deep as you can. Give me as much information as you can. I'll listen to it all. I don't have to agree with it. I don't have to take your advice, but shit, give it to me. I don't care. And so I think I've been very good at taking, and I've even gotten that when I used to work for other people. They're like, wow, like you listen to feedback. I'm like, I've always done that. So like, I think I'm pretty good at it, but I think as far as a point of growth, over time and experience and all those things, is that everybody takes feedback differently, which interestingly ties to your question about communicating across borders, cultures, different languages, and things like that. So even if I want to communicate something at work to my partner, to whatever, as a blunt communicator, I've learned over time that, like, if, let's say my partner, so take it out of work. So my ex, I recently broke up with my ex, like recently being COVID erased 2 years of my life. So technically 2.5 years ago. But like,
it's true.
So we had very different communications. He was British, you know, like, it's so like his way of communicating was very much sideways, come at things, very different in mine. And so I had to learn in that relationship, like, even though impact trumps any intent, right? We say that in a nonprofit and movement space, like, you go, oh, I'm so sorry, that wasn't my intent. Fuck your intent. We don't care about intent, we care about impact, right? And so as relationships, I had to learn as a blunt communicator to tone it down sometimes, because the impact of those words might be stronger on my partner, my British partner, who's much more passive, sideways speaking, nothing to it. He would interpret it much more harmful than I meant. And so, like, the way that conversation flowed was in the beginning of getting to know each other and things like that, I would say, I am a blunt communicator. And one of the things that you will appreciate about this is if you ask me what's wrong, I'm never going to tell you nothing. I will tell you what is wrong if something is wrong. I'm very much a direct person, and you will appreciate that. The parts where it may be difficult is if you're not used to people communicating very directly, you might interpret it much more harsher than I intend. Yeah. If that's ever the case, please tell me that's not what I want to do. And so if it lands on you that way, let's talk about what that could look like. And same with him. Like, he would say something kind of like, oh, you know, it might be nice if blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, sounds good. Sure, that could be nice. And what he meant was, I would like this to happen.
I'll add it to the maybe list. Thanks.
Exactly. I'll put that in there. Like, yeah, exactly. So, like, I also had to learn that. And it's like, this is what I mean about the whole kind of, like, the calculus of people, right? Like, that whole mystery of, like, understanding what people mean and how they think and all of that stuff. So this feedback question that's not just about like in work. I love how you said about creative ideas too, of like how ideas could be an extension of us. And so it feels like if someone rejects it, they rejected us. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so I love this idea of how do we process feedback and what are the ways in which we can do that better for ourselves and others?
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, so what's your favorite way of receiving feedback? Do you like it blunt back? You're like, I want it just direct.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Direct. Give it to me straight. Like,
Absolutely. Great.
Incapable of bullshitting, like completely incapable. So just, I don't like it. I skip, just give it to me straight. Stop playing on my ovaries. Just give it to me.
Exactly. Absolutely. What's worst feedback style for you then?
Passive aggressive. Passive aggressive. It makes me respect the person less because I would have greater respect, and not just in that like, hey, I'm trying to be kind or whatever, but someone who's purposefully being opaque, purposefully being passive aggressive, like that kind of thing. Like, man, I'd respect you more if you just grew a fucking spine and said what you actually wanted to say to my face. And so like the kind of like passive aggressive, like the not good intended passiveness, right? So not the like, hey, I'm kind of trying to like be kind, but that really kind of, I'm just gonna do this. That's my least favorite thing. Just like I said, it makes me respect the person less because I feel like if you really do feel that way, just say it.
Yeah. I know you're not. Yeah, you're not saving any face by being clever.
At a person, like I was at a social event and this person was complaining, a loaded word, and I mean it that way, was complaining. About how the world has changed so much and like with the gender stuff, it's like you can't even say pregnant women anymore. You have to say pregnant people. The world has changed. Oh, and like, blah, blah, blah. And my response was, well, shit, if you want to be transphobic, be that way. Nobody's stopping you. If you want to be exclusive, be that way. Like, no one is stopping you. I really have zero patience for this, like, oh, I don't even know what I can say. You can say whatever you want. Take responsibility for how that's received. And so like this whole kind of like passive aggressive micro aggressive, like that should have zero time for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so the next section is about burnout. You know, I feel like you know, humanity is turning a corner on this. I feel like everybody taking their breaks this summer and those well-deserved vacations and pent-up demand for vacations and downtime has been good for people. Yes, I feel like they're a lot more calm. But so moving to Europe again for you, did that happen during the pandemic or before?
Yeah, moving to Europe happened during the pandemic. I was actually in here in November, December, here in Lisbon, November, December, height of Omicron. And I came back to the United States with COVID after not getting it the whole time. So yeah, it's been interesting going back and forth between Lisbon and the US as I've been going for the past almost a year at this point. And it's I came over here during the middle of a pandemic.
So yeah, it's a lot of life changes for you and a lot of other things. Like, how do you, and time zone now changes on top of that. How do you manage burnout? How do you kind of keep all those balls in the air besides, you know, taking your breaks clearly, but is there anything else you do day to day?
Yeah. So one of the things is for myself and my team, I put work blocks on my calendar. So we're a Google facing enterprise. So not Teams, but Google Drive, Google, all the sheets, Google, all that stuff. So we're Google enterprise. And one of the things that I do is I block on my time, on my calendar, working hours. And so when someone pulls up my calendar, they don't have to like do math to figure out whether or not I'm working in that time or whatever. It literally has a block that says I am working. And so they can schedule meetings in that block or not schedule meetings. And so it's nice. And then the thing that stops me from doing is waking up. I'm an early riser. Waking up and be like, okay, I'm going to start work. Okay, good luck with that, Tawana. Starting at 7, 8 a.m. and working till 10 p.m. Like, that's burnout territory right there. And so it also is a reminder to me, like, I am working this hour to that hour. And the other thing we did is we switched the firm to a 4-day work week company. So we work public-facing Monday through Thursday, usually. And then there are zero client meetings on Friday. If there's an emergency or something, we always have room because there's no other meeting on Friday. And then I encourage team members, like, do your work with what works for you. like no meetings on Fridays because we're not client facing that day, no internal meetings on Mondays. So all of the meetings are stacked Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And cool. So for me, it's super helpful because I work long ass days. And so I end up not working on Fridays pretty much ever. I lock my computer away and do not have access to my computer. So I can only do so much work as an iPad or a phone will allow me to do. And so that's really helping to stymie out burnout. And it's great too. The nice thing about not starting work until 2 p.m. most days, so that's 9 a.m. in New York, is I could literally wake up, so 6, 7 in the morning, like, you know what? Going to the beach. I could spend the entire morning at the beach and then come back restored, rejuvenated, and then start my day at 2 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done a shift of, I get my kid off to school and then I have my time. I have like an hour on my calendar that is workout time or putting around, taking care of my plants. That has been so nice to know that I checked off my self-care for the day.
You know? Exactly, right?
Yeah, it's incredible to move it to the start of your day. And and also have that luxury to be able to take that time. But it's pretty incredible. Yeah, it really does make a huge difference. So what makes you come back to this busy, busy life every day? What's kind of the drive?
What makes me come back? Like, why do I still keep doing this work after so long and all of these things? Mm-hmm. Like, it's been 87,000 years. Like, why do I still keep doing it? Yes. Several things. I think on the, sexual reproductive health side of the firm, the things that keep bringing me back are people, honestly. It's like, on the micro level of like individual interactions and things like that, people still and always will need and be excited about improving their sex lives and improving their relationships. Mm-hmm. And I get excited about that, the fact that people care. I did a series here of sex talks. We sold out. I got one tonight. Sold out. The organizer person is texting me like, can we add people in? And they'd be standing. I'm like, bring them in if they want in. So I love it that people care. Like, that keeps me going. Like, they actually give a shit about it. So I love that. And then on the client-facing side, it's that it's these, this is the more macro level, right? That these organizations, they care and they're winning and they're succeeding. When Kansas got when they struck down the attacks that were coming on them on restricting abortion, I was so proud as a Midwesterner to see that happen in Kansas, but then also to see, like, we know the majority of American people approve of terminating pregnancies in some aspect, right? Like, it is not the case that all Americans, or even the majority of Americans, are 100% against abortion. And so it's like seeing them win, seeing these organizations in the trenches, fighting the good fight, everything from making sure that everyone who is legally eligible to vote does not have their vote suppressed, which is incredibly important in states like yours and North Kakalaka. Yeah. And so all of, So all of these things, it's like, I am so inspired by the leaders that are doing the work and winning the wins. I say it all the time, like, if we were the minority, like, if there was this, like, silent majority of haters that want the world to be off, they wouldn't have to fucking cheat and try and steal elections and suppress the vote. If you're the goddamn majority, you want everybody to vote. But time over time, when more people vote, Democrats win. And I say that as someone who's not a Democrat. I'm a socialist.
Yes. Yes. Nice. So I think, so relationships are incredible. And I think, that your genuine interest in relationships and how to help people work better together in their lives and their sex and their work, you know, all of it. It's neat that you're able to share that with the world. So thank you. I'm trying to think of a clever segue, but I can't. So we'll just talk about Below Deck. So I love Below Deck. I think it's a really interesting show about relationships and about feedback, right? I think the whole show is about how people receive feedback from the charter guests. So if people have not watched Below Deck, it is a show about working life on super yachts. So super rich. Also, I think it's always very ironic folks who work so closely with nonprofits work and see how the other half live. Well, I guess the other, 2% live? Is that? On super yachts. But so I genuinely love it because it's about working as teams and how people work together. And then they add, you know, fun relationship stuff in there too. So, but you were a charter guest on Below Deck, and can you share anything about, you know, what that was like being on a reality show for a couple days of your life?
Yeah, I will say, one, you are such a good human being. You're like, it's about teamwork, how people are together. All those things. I was like, I got to drink champagne on a super yacht, bitches.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious. But yeah, no, I loved the experience. It was amazing. And yeah, you're right. That's known information that those charters are paid for, that people actually charter the super yacht. And so I am not mega wealthy. My friend Billy has much deeper pockets than I do. And he was the primary. Him and his partner were the primary. And he invited us to come and celebrate with him. So I'm just very grateful. He's a very generous and wonderful human being. And so it was a good experience. I was in Malta. That's also public knowledge now too, that I was in Malta, which was my first time in the country. I've spent a lot of time in Southern Europe. I currently am living in Southern Europe. So I love this region of the world. I hadn't yet been to Malta. So it was wonderful to spend more time in Malta too. So it was a good time. I really loved it.
Yeah.
And I love boats. I love water. I love all of those things. And I didn't grow up with a lot of money. I'm not like some chick who ever thought I'd be riding a goddamn super yacht in Malta. So so one of the things that I love is that, like, I always try to remind people, it's like, find your passion, your joy in the way that you can. When I lived in D.C., there is a Black-owned business called Float D.C. You get 10 friends together and it ends up being about $20 each. And you have a boat that you have yourself and you can bring your own food and your drinks and all of these things. Yeah. So I always say, find the way to do the thing that you really love to do, you know?
Absolutely.
And that it's like, doesn't have to be some extravagant kind of whatever thing. I've been on a shit ton of boats before I was ever on Below Deck, and I never paid a lot of money to be on all of those. There's always ways to kind of find different ways to do things, you know?
Yes, usually. Absolutely. Yeah. It's really neat. It's neat to, we were so excited when we saw you. Brian's like, oh, that's Tawana. Oh my gosh. I was like, wait, what? You were such a kind guest. Thank you for being a kind charter guest.
Thank you.
Oh gosh. Yeah. We've watched every episode of that show. But also I think, it's also interesting too, just that, folks who, we're very middle class, but having those kind of upper experiences, and like I turn into it's like embarrassing when I go into these experiences, and like because Brian saved for like 5 years for us to fly business class to France for our anniversary.
Nice.
And so it was really amazing experience. My daughter is forever ruined, but that's okay.
I love it
on planes. But when we were there, somebody, like the stewardess, asked me like, oh, did you get like bumped up from the other class? Because like it was so clear that I was not.
Oh my
from
god,
that.
That's shitty to say.
It was awful, but it was funny. It's a funny thing, but I just turned into like a total nerd. I'm so excited to like be part of a different world sometimes, you know. But it's interesting. But well, thank you for talking to me about that. I have my one degree connection to Below Deck now, and I'm very excited about that.
And one of the things I tell people about all, along with that, with your flight story, is like right now, if you want to fly to Lisbon, you can usually, for most parts of the year, get from Washington, D.C., which is where I was right before I moved here. You can get from Washington, D.C. to Lisbon for like $400 round trip.
Wow.
And so it's, So my hack is subscribe to Google Flights. Tell them where you live, where you want to go, and just say, hey, when it gets cheap, let me know. And they'll just email you and be like, hey, it's $380, which it was when I flew out here in November. So it's all
it is.
Always ways to find cheap shit.
Yep. Yeah, that's how Brian did it too. He did Google Alerts and did all the alerts. Yeah. And one day he's like, I got to go buy tickets. I'm like, okay. Go to it right now.
I gotta go. I love it.
Cool. So this final section of our conversation is rapid fire. So it's supposed to be single word, single phrase answer to these questions. Communications folks are hard. We like words. So, but we'll see.
I'm gonna close my eyes. You can't see me right now, but I'm closing my eyes to concentrate on like one word that's hard. That's very hard. Okay.
Okay. You ready?
Okay, I think I'm ready. Okay.
What's your favorite word?
Fuck.
Yes. What's your least favorite word?
Use.
Okay, this one could be a phrase or an area, but what's your personal nonprofit cause or passion?
Sexual reproductive health, rights, justice, education.
There we go. I like it. Is there a nonprofit cause that gets too much attention?
No such thing. Everybody needs attention because they exist to right some injustice, so they need attention.
Oh, I like that. What's your favorite curse word?
Motherfucker.
And then what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Ooh. You know, in my later life, I'd love, not like for money, but like when I picture like, you know, 95-year-old Tawana, I'd like to like just be gardening. I'd love to like be planting shit and be excited about like some flower coming out of the ground. Like, I love this idea of just like, that just seems so peaceful for to me. Just like you wake up and like, oh, I do a lily pop. Like something like that. But I think like just like focusing on my own damn garden, just having like a really peaceful life when I'm old would be very cool.
It's nice. It's great. And then is there any nonprofit professionals or organizations you'd like to hear on this podcast?
I would say I would love to see executive directors, CEOs, C-suite folks who are Black, Brown, undocumented, immigrant undocumented, LGBTQ. So people talking about what their route up has been for them, what the space has been like. I'd love to see more of that. I'd love to see disability rights advocates who, as encroaching right-wing stuff happens, they increasingly find themselves swept up and stuff. They're like, what does this have to do with us?
Yeah,
so like, exactly. Just like disability rights advocates. I'd love to see, oh, so much in the intersections of all of that, right? So like people who are working with like trans vets, for example, is fascinating to me. So like veteran organizations, also trans, also BIPOC, so like people who are working a lot of that, I think is interesting, because I think in the intersections of these issues, like I was talking about sexual health and voting rights, for example, right? Or climate variability, climate change, climate justice, all that stuff, and sexual health. When people can't feed themselves, then things like trafficking and forced labor and all different kinds of things that look really ugly, and sexual assault type of shit tends to happen. And so like all of these kinds of things, when we look at the intersections, we see beautiful routes forward that might not be clear if we were only looking at one of these things. So I think that's what I would say. Folks who are working in that space of like BIPOC-led organizations that are focusing on disabilities, or like trans groups and LGBTQ rights groups that are working with like undocumented folks, or just different stuff like that, I think is interesting.
That's cool. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It is always a delight to talk to you. It's amazing. I think, the way that you lead your life is incredibly inspirational. So good job on doing what you do every day.
Hey, and thank you for having me. I love being had.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, have a great afternoon. Day. Awesome. Yeah. You take care.
Thank you for listening. If you want to get all the new episodes sent to you as we release them, subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And until then, keep creating good.